everyone, it's Jess. I have no idea why my audio quality is so bad in this episode. There's something wrong with my microphone, but I really hope that you can bear through it with us because this episode is great. We have an excellent conversation with Liana, and next time my audio will be better. So I apologize and thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to RPG R&D. I'm one of your hosts, Jess Geyer. I'm one half of Wannabe Games, and I make tabletop role-playing games, usually with some sort of message. And I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Craig Campbell. Hello, Craig.
Hi, Jess. I am Craig Campbell. I own Nerdburger Games, and I make role-playing games and am working on a card game. And sometimes my games have a message, although they're usually not as clear as some of the stuff that Wannabe Games does. But that's okay. We're going to talk about all sorts of interesting things today. Buckle up, everybody. Liana's here. Hello. Welcome.
Good morning. Hi, I'm Liana McKenzie. This is what, my like fourth time back or something like
fifth
that?
Fifth or sixth. I think we're for regulars. We're up to like five and six times for regulars.
I'm losing count of things quickly. But
everybody is, yeah.
Always happy to be back.
We've had this conversation, I think, was it with Pete?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But my name is Leanna McKenzie. I'm the owner of Valorous Games. I make Valor. It is a fun anime-inspired tabletop RPG about shouting heroically and crafting your own laser spam attacks. I'm also one of the hosts for the Asians Represent podcast, where I've been doing things like examining anime, manga, video games, just general like media and pop culture. So there's been some good intersection with some of the other work I've been doing over there, and excited to discuss today's topic, for which I have a lot of things to say.
As do I. And I'm so excited that we're talking about this topic. It's a great time for it, too. We are discussing games with that talk about a social issue. There's lots of social issues to talk about. Craig, do you want to introduce this topic?
I think that's that's kind of the topic. You did a good job with that. That'll work. I mean, we'll look at it from kind of GMing perspective and by extension, sort of player's perspective as well. And then as well as talking about like designing games that incorporate such things. When you start to dig into social issues, you start to get into elements of religion and politics and personal experience and lived experience that you may have that other people don't have or that other people have that you don't have. And it starts to get, touchy and dicey, and it's something to take some care with. So we don't typically get hard down into some of these topics in other episodes, but we decided finally somebody picked that topic from the list, and here we are. So Liana, why did you decide to dive us into this one this time?
I'm honestly, I'm not going to mince words. I am a trans woman and I'm in incredible danger right now, so this seems like a good thing to talk about.
Absolutely. It's such a good thing to talk about. It's such a good thing to be bringing to your table as a game designer. Because if we try to avoid what's happening, if we try to avoid talking about it and try to avoid building up community in the ways that we can, everybody's in danger, especially the most vulnerable of us. And I mean, I'm very passionate about this. Obviously, my games tend to speak for themselves in terms of what my beliefs are regarding authoritarian regimes. So it's super, super important. And our people who are trans that are in our lives and in the community are in danger. People who are Black, people who are undocumented, like so many people are in danger. And there are so many games out there that can, highlight this and bring them to our gaming sphere, because our gaming sphere is not a place that is always devoid of these social issues. Sometimes we need to confront them directly. Leanna, do you have any games in particular or gaming advice just like to start us off regarding GMing games with these social issues that are embedded in them?
I mean, first off, before we get into it, obviously use of safety tools is important for this kind of a thing. But I've always believed that as an artist, your politics infuse everything you do. So for me, just the idea of addressing social issues in your TTRPG is natural because as a consequence of the world that you build, you are going to have countless decisions that will influence how politics and all of that is perceived. Something I've chosen to do recently with a setting I'm building, this is going to be our first commercial setting for Valorous Games. We're working on like the monster book right now, and then we're going to get the setting book hopefully within the following year. Just kind of like as a starting baseline, I decided quite deliberately I'm going to build not a perfect society, but a society that is better and presents a vision of a future where there is more equality, there is more care for the individual. Kind of use that as a model, right? Of envision a future that we want to get people thinking, well, wait, why don't we have this? What's standing in the way of us having this?
I like that kind of framing of because so many games that are like your campaigns that you might run that are political or like have a lot of those issues embedded in them are the opposite side, like the dystopia side. Here's what it could be, and here's how we stop it. Giving somebody a like gold standard, hey, check this out. Wouldn't it be cool if we did this? I like that twist on that. So what sort of, I love that you also said about safety tools. I also think that's super important. And I think that it goes without saying, we've talked about safety tools and talking to your players a lot. I don't think it's necessarily fair to start piling on in your face social messages unless everybody's on board with it. 'Cause sometimes people do need an escape, and I do recognize that too. They don't want to necessarily get into things, especially like if it's a hot topic happening right now, people may not want to deal with that in your game, but I can see like people who would be more uncomfortable playing a game like that has like where the theme is like about overthrowing like an authoritarian leader. I can see like why people who would be uncomfortable with that would enjoy playing a game like in the setting that you're describing. It's a little nicer. It's a little more pleasant, but still political.
Yeah, it's and that's the thing too, like with the setting that I've made, I have a lot of the human villains in the settings are basically other colonial nations that keep trying to invade. So I have like the ultra Christian nationalist enemy. I have the British. Just like, yes, the British, and they have airships now. Oh no. But like, that's the thing too, is you can present kind of these ideals, these fascist ideals as a ever-present force that is constantly trying to invade you, and something that must be fought diligently and constantly.
I want to throw out there as the white dude in this discussion something that I think is important for other white dudes and to an extent other people who have some level of privilege to keep in mind is that I often see when these discussions come up in RPG communities online and so forth, see people saying, well, it's just a game. I just want to play the game. I don't want to have politics infused in it. I don't infuse politics. I don't bring my stuff to the table. The reason that you don't may be, and very likely may be, because those things that you are, you know, that other people are addressing and dealing with don't affect your life in a direct way in some, you know, like regularly. So you think of the world as from your point of view, right? So you're looking at it as, well, you know, I don't put politics into my games because that type of stuff doesn't affect me. Well, that's because it affects other people, and you don't realize necessarily the extent to which it affects other people. And so, like Leanna's comment about, like, your politics come into art in the sense that if there's a lack of anything that seems like political in your art, it's because, or potentially because, these things don't affect you. And so you don't think about them, and you don't address them in your art, and you don't address them in, you know, a creative thing like RPGs, which is essentially, you know, cooperative storytelling, and where everybody's kind of bringing some part of themselves to it. So that's something to keep in mind. Like the idea that it's just a game, or it's just a painting, or it's just a book, or a comic or something, and it doesn't have any politics in it, and the author didn't, or the artist or the creator didn't put any politics into it. Maybe they didn't consciously write a story about some social issue. Maybe they didn't depict something in a painting that has, you know, that revolves around a social issue. But the fact that they don't really think about it is part of it. Mm-hmm. And is part of what we're dealing with when we're talking about these types of things.
Do you mind if I jump in here? Because I do have something to add on this.
Sure.
I wanted to bring up too that a lot of designers will claim their stuff isn't political, but what it is in truth is it is political. And because you haven't challenged those political beliefs that you've infused your campaign with, you are going to reinforce in some cases some very nasty things. The example, in my opinion, just talking from like a fantasy role-playing perspective, is fantasy racism, for example. A lot of games are infused with this idea of, like, for example, elves and dwarves can never get along and they always hate each other. Like, that's an incredibly political statement about, like, two distinct peoples who just are incapable of seeing eye to eye, especially when in popular fiction. Like, often, you know, like some of the trope makers, like Tolkien, you know, eventually has this beautiful friendship between an elf and a dwarf. But the fallout from that and how that's been synthesized and interpreted throughout a number of different gameplay and generation is, like, that's a problem. I don't want to pick on the man too much, but I will in this case. Gary Gygax had some extremely racial essentialist opinions, and said some extremely horrific things, like equating a lawful good paladin exterminating goblin children to being ethically right, much like the Trail of Tears and the extermination of actual Native Americans. So understand that these politics are infused in the games and the fiction that we consume. And if you are using what's quote unquote standard, you may be, you know, complicit in infusing your game or your setting with archaic and honestly kind of awful ideas.
And that, I mean, that's why it's so insidious, like the way that our power is structured in from everything in our society is insidious, in that if it is the status quo, it becomes so normalized, people become so desensitized to it. It's especially easy to become desensitized to it if, like, for example, if you're a white person like me, like, I don't see, because I don't have to experience that systemic racism. I don't have to experience all that prejudice. No one's prejudiced against me because no one's being racist against me because I'm white. so I don't have to look at it. And I don't, like, it's easier for me to ignore if the power structures are giving me an advantage than it would be if those power structures are taken away, which is why for me, like, as a white woman, like, when something happens to reproductive rights, obviously that's going to, like, that makes alarm bells go off on me. But, like, I have to, and I have had to, and continue to have to do the work to make sure that I'm also paying attention when it's not affecting me, or when they are systems that are giving me power instead of just taking it away. I think that's super important. And if you don't pay attention to, like, the stuff that Liana is saying right now, if you don't pay attention and think about it, you have, as she said, like, you could fall into the trap of reinforcing them without even knowing it. And that kind of sucks. And you probably don't want to do that. So I would say, even if you think you're playing an apolitical game, to consider those social issues. I think that's a big TM tip. Don't just go into it thinking, there's no politics in this game. There's no politics in this game of Threadbare. It's a game about dystopian toys that have been discarded and come to life. Don't worry about this evil mare baby toy. Who knows why this evil mare baby toy is here? Like, you could accidentally do something that could be shitty for someone at your table.
And the great thing about having the possibility of addressing these, to whatever extent, it can be to just a very small extent. It can be, you know, like, you can have a game where it's central to the story that you're telling and the themes that you're exploring, is that it's an opportunity. I like to look at all of this as an opportunity, you know, like, from my point of view, to learn about what other people who are different from me in some ways are experiencing, what they're having to deal with, what they have had to deal with in the past, even if, like, you know, this particular thing isn't around anymore, but there's still the vestiges of it, or there's still, you know, like, there's still certain segments of the population that are resistant to, like, ever moving forward and changing and grasping that opportunity that is presented to you, you know, every day of your life, really. You know, like, there's no wrong time to start paying attention to this sort of stuff. The best time is, you know, long time ago. The second best time is right now.
I also think it's a great opportunity, as I mentioned. I think gaming is such a great opportunity to help soft train some skills that will be really useful to your players in terms of being able to handle social conflict, or to look at when you're wrong and admit when you're wrong. Like, even little things like that can be super powerful. Like, how do we negotiate a conflict between two groups that don't seem want to get along? If you have been playing a group with your fantasy racism, dwarves hate elves hate dwarves, and thus never the two shall meet, maybe you could figure out a way to make your players ambassadors now. Like, how can we negotiate communities and help some real healing help in a community? Maybe that's a big lift, but it's something to consider. Or even within little groups, like, you have a group of villagers who want to, I don't know, do something. They want to move somewhere. They want to build something, and they're having disputes about what it is. And, like, you could be practicing those things at your table. Like, how do we have communication in a community, and go from there and build from there? Because all those things are also political, even if we don't necessarily think of them as political.
It's also an opportunity, I feel like. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Craig.
That's okay. Go ahead. Keep rolling.
I'll keep going. It's also an opportunity, too, because, like, the thing with community building is all about finding common ground. So let's go back to the elf and dwarf example. These are both extremely long-lived peoples. They both have reputations for exceptional crafts and a high level of artistry. They have a great emphasis on tradition and kind of being one with their environment in different ways. Why can't they get along? Why can't we bridge a gap between these two people who share a lot of similar values?
And it's worth noting that in the media that we consume that address these things, and not to beat a dead horse, but, for example, the dwarf and elf thing, like, if Legolas and Gimli just hated each other constantly for the entire three books or three movies, that would not be very entertaining. It would get very old. The fact that those two characters learned, they took the opportunity to understand a little bit more and to develop a friendship and to come to appreciate each other for different reasons. Like, there's a reason that many authors present, here's this thing, or they maybe they didn't do it on purpose, maybe they did do it on purpose, but here's this thing that's kind of, you know, this it's unlike, you know, unlikable, or downright despicable, whatever it may be. And then they have characters who buck that trope, who go against that, who develop empathy, or who become friends, or who do good. You know, drow are all old school, drow are all evil. But here's this wonderful character who's the one exception to that rule. And we're going to follow their story, because were you really going to follow the story of Driss Jordan if he was just a rat bastard and was
And he's
doing
a man.
terrible, terrible
He
things?
can saw the women.
Oh, it's the authors of those stories, and very often us in our games, we have the opportunity as well. Like, they buck those things and they find ways to incorporate, you know, to make the characters be ones that grow and change and learn and embrace those opportunities.
I'm glad you brought up Driss too, because I haven't read those books in a while, but I do know some people who are still fans of like the more modern books. And Bob Salvatore is actually an excellent example of like learning and
Oh,
growing.
yeah.
From what I've seen, he's extremely trans accepting. They've been working on removing a lot of like the drow things and then just making it like this particular Loth cult is fucked up, but that doesn't necessarily make the rest of drow evil and bad, just like these who are under this extremely abusive social structure who have ended up in this bad place. And I think that comes back too. It's like, yeah, you're gonna mess up. I mean, especially people who are coming from a place of more privilege, you don't know what you don't know. And you're going to make mistakes, and that's okay. It's just like you need to have that open mind to when people go, hey, that was kind of gross, or that didn't make me feel good. Go like, oh, well, I don't want to make people feel bad, so how about I change what I do so that they feel happy instead when they interact with the things that I'm writing to make them happy so that they give me money.
I think that might be one of the things too that prevents some people, and I get the sense a lot also from white men that I've played games with, that they don't want to necessarily be overtly political because they're afraid that they might do this. And I think that's like a nice place to start. I appreciate that you don't want to harm people and you don't want to be overly political because you're afraid of not doing it perfectly. Like you don't want to include trans people in your game because you don't want to do it perfectly, or you don't want to make this evil villain be a woman because you don't want to do it. You're afraid you might not do it perfectly. I don't think that there is necessarily such a thing as perfect. There's never going to be a perfect representation. There's never going to be the perfect politics. And I don't think that you should, especially with when you're gaming with your friends, I don't think you should ever be beholden to that. I think what makes it perfect is that you are learning from mistakes if you're and not getting offended if your players tell you, hey, that sucked. Can you we not do this? Or making changes as you want to do it. I think that that is where you can do better. And like, yes, obviously we should hold people accountable when they do or say really, really shitty stuff. But you know, everyone does say and make mistakes and have to learn and grow because we're all learning and we all have our own internal biases that we might not even know about, as we discussed before. You know, we might not know. I don't think that should scare people away from trying to include these things in their games. Maybe you don't want to do it for the first time ever in a big broadcast AP that you're putting on YouTube, but your gaming table should be a safe space for everybody, including like you as the GM too. Like it should also be a safe space for you to kind of explore.
Also, there's actually a very here's a gaming life hack. A lot of times people are afraid that if I include a trans person, it will be a stereotype. So, to prevent this, include a bunch of different trans people who are all different people. And this is for any minority group. The best way to not be to proceed with it boldly and without fear is to just include a lot of people of diverse backgrounds and make them people. That is the best way that you can respect any minority, and especially like disadvantaged minority group, is show them often and uplift their humanity, the good and the bad.
That's a great life hack. That's a big gamer advice right there.
I'm in the middle of writing a game that I'm heavy into the setting right now, which means I'm developing NPCs and so forth. And I've been thinking about that sort of thing exactly. And Liana, you beat me to it. Like, that was literally the next thing I was going to kind of bring up, because I'm thinking about what I'm representing on the page and what I'm like, what kind of NPCs I'm providing. And I only have so many. Like, the book's not, 500 pages long, so I can't give you every possible combination of different type of person, but I can give you variety across different subgroups. And then that extends to illustrations and making sure that, like, you're not representing a particular group of people as always being this type of thing. They're like, if I had, like, I'll just say it, the game I'm working on is all about space pirates fighting like a dark sci-fi regime. It's all in one solar system, bunch of different species sailing ships in space, right? And if I make like every depiction of a freedom fighter is a white dude, or white dudes are only depicted as freedom fighters, that sends a message in the for the purposes of that game. Make sure that there's, a white dude that's a rat bastard at some point, and make sure there's a white dude that's like, well, they're a little gray, they kind of did some bad things, but they mostly try to do right, and make sure, and do that across all of the, do that for women, LGBTQ people, people of color, so forth. You just As a designer, it's one of those things that I find myself making choices. I literally have like an illustration matrix where I make notes about, like, as this, so I can go down and just remind myself what the art order says. It's like, okay, this illustration has people like this. This illustration has people like that. And I can double check and make sure that I'm kind of peppering that all over the place. And kind of this, I should probably do the same thing more often with NPCs that I'm generating for the game as well. Not something I've kept track of it kind of in my head, but I haven't like written it down. But that can be useful to a designer, that sort of thing, just kind of keeping in mind, and just it's a little Excel spreadsheet or just a little list, or jotted down a note on a notepad that you keep by your computer. And it can work for a GM as well. And to be honest, it can work for a player when they're talking about their characters' backgrounds and like the people that have wronged them versus the people that have helped them. This can pervade every level of gaming, from casual players to like hard down, like forever DMs and people who like mostly get to design and don't get to play as often, like some of us.
I think too, like, I mean, that's coming from kind of this like all this traditional sci-fi, and I'm thinking like, when you think of like Star Wars and stuff, when you think of the Empire, you're not thinking of all of these cool, weird aliens and people and women and all these, like, you're thinking of old white dudes in crisp uniforms. That's the Empire. And like, I don't know. I haven't dug into whether George Lucas kind of actually meant to do that. And obviously, there's still a lot of, it's, again, not a perfect movie to represent a perfect politics, but that kind of sends the message to the audience that, this is also why does the Empire look like this? What are they representing? And I think that could be another way, like purposefully taking away the diversity from an evil faction, because that is what fascism does. Fascism likes to crush everything that is not like them. That can also be a statement too. If that's not the statement you want to make, if that is not what you want to highlight, then you should make sure that you are not highlighting that. But if they are all, maybe they are all evil and trying to be the same and trying to assimilate. which I think making people assimilate is evil. That I know that's a very brave thing for me to say right now.
Honestly, if you hadn't brought that up, I was going to. I think benefit of the doubt is worthwhile. I would expect that George Lucas did intend that, because in art direction and art design, you can send a very powerful message. Like, you don't have to call it out, even. Like, you don't have to be super ham-fisted about it. Just having a faction that is mostly white men is just very visually striking. And having that kind of homogenous look is a very classic way to portray fascists, and very effective, especially when you contrast them with a diverse rebellion group showing like the different aliens and different genders and like different skin tones and all of that. Like, that's super effective. Especially too, when you have that odd outlier within the evil empire, you know, like you have a woman or you have like a minority character, you've had obviously all of these other minorities in the rebel faction. So seeing someone who's propping up the empire is also a great place for social commentary, because that is something that we deal with a lot, as, for example, the trans community having to deal with the fact that Caitlyn Jenner is the way she is.
Yep.
It's interesting to see the evolution of things too, because I mean, I finally got around to watching Andor season one, relatively recently, and as you were talking, Jess, about how like in the earlier films it was like the Empire is like, you know, middle aged to old white dudes, I'm thinking about Andor and I'm like, wow, they had quite the variety on every side of the coin there. There were despicable people of a few different types, and there were, you know, our heroes were of a few different types. And I actually found myself, as I was watching, thinking about, well, why aren't there enough? It seems like an awful lot of humans. There aren't as many alien species who are like clearly on the side of the rebellion, or about to be, or clearly part of the empire, or, you know, like some adjacent kind of situation. And I find myself thinking, well, okay, they have limitations of special effects and all that sort of thing. And then we as the viewer will identify more easily. Not that you can't identify a great deal with an alien looking, you know, somebody from another species from another planet, because, you know, everybody loves Chewbacca. And you felt really bad for him when certain things happen. And but, you know,
when he lost that game,
they do pepper it in there. in Andor, they like, and I find myself thinking, oh, okay, they have reasons for, you know, a few different reasons for why there aren't quite so many. There's aliens, but they're usually kind of, they tend to be peripheral, and they like, they help the main characters along at one point. But that I think is just, you know, for how the characters will connect with the viewership. And that's just another thing to kind of keep in mind too, is that, you know, if you've been doing something a certain way, your stories, the way you present your games, the way you write and prepare adventures for your group, all that stuff, that can all evolve too. And I think if I really think about it and look at like stuff that I've GM'd in the last several years versus stuff that I GM'd very early on, I am sure there are very, very telling differences. I guarantee you. Myself growing up in small town, rural northern Wisconsin, moving to college and getting into gaming a year in, where now I suddenly met a whole bunch of people that were very, very different from me, but I still did kind of hang around mostly with white guys. And it was, you know, at the time it was because they were the gamers, the white, at least at the school that I went to, it was mostly white dudes playing RPGs, or at least where I could see them playing. There may have been a billion home groups that were very different. But that's just what I experienced at the time. And then, so as time went by, like the way I've presented stuff in games that I've GM'd and the way I've designed, I mean, I see a marked difference just in the 8 years of Nerdburger Games, because I've learned a great deal, in part because of people like you too. Probably quite a few people who are listening to this, because I know who some of you are, because you tell me you listen. So Yeah, you can build across that, and you can address it a lot or address it a little, and you can do a lot of different ways. So it's I don't I, you know but and we're doing a great job of a team of not doing what like so many people would listen to this and not, would listen to this and would claim, but like, well, they just preached at us the whole time. They just said you have to do it this way, this way, this way. And I'm like, no, we got like there's a lot of different ways that you can kind of approach this and grow and change and have things happen.
I mean,
As
in
long as you're not
nature.
as long as you're not staying stagnant or moving backwards,
Yeah. It
you're
makes your games better,
doing
just
well.
in general. It does. Something that you said reminded me of, so for me, when I have to always make an effort to, because so much of the media that I consumed, like all the fantasy media or the horror media that I consumed, like in books, and those stories that had like adventures in them, so many of them just featured like a male main character. I often find myself writing that story again, which is like, and that's me. Like I feel like I'm a strong person. I'm a feminist, and I know that I am very like I could go on adventure. Sure, why not? I could picture myself doing that. But I'm still, I often find myself writing one of these characters, and it's another man. I'm like, why did I do that? It was just kind of an impulse, and I think whether you're GMing or whether you're designing a game, kind of mixing up the media that you're consuming too, because yes, you're getting influenced by society. That's not something you can easily change, unfortunately. But you can change like the media you're consuming, because the more diversity you have in the media that you're consuming, the more diverse your output will just kind of naturally become too. If you play games with different characters, and you watch movies that are directed and written and star people who aren't just white men. So sorry, no more Christopher Nolan movies. No, you can still watch Christopher Nolan movies. I'm just joking. I just wouldn't recommend it. Sorry, I don't know why I got on Christopher Nolan slander. It has nothing to do with anything, but I always end up there in my life. But what I'm saying is that the more you consume that's different,
All
the more your games will be different.
roads end at I don't like Christopher Nolan's movies, and I don't think he makes movies that people should watch.
I didn't say people shouldn't watch them. I think he makes very pretty movies. His movies are
That's
very pretty.
fair.
I'll give that to
Meanwhile, I'm sitting here like, God, I should watch more movies, but I don't have time.
I mean, but your media consumption can be anything. It doesn't have to be movies.
Well, and this is just making me think. So like I feel like I talk about this every time I come on here about intentionality, right? And that is both in how you design and in how you pick the media you consume. I've been reading a long-running Japanese light novel series called Ascendance of a Bookworm, which is by Miya Kazuki, a woman. And it's about it is an isekai, but it is probably the most intricate and realized world building for an isekai I have seen ever. And it definitely harkens back to kind of the older female women led isekai, like your Fushigi-gis or your Escaflowne's or your Inuyasha's. But it has this fantasy world, and the fantasy world has a lot of really nasty cased things and a lot of bad classism going on. And the main character, mine, has to navigate these and eventually like push back against some of these social conventions, even though like her main goal is just like, I want to read a bunch of books. That's what I'm about. But also I can't ignore people suffering in front of me. So like it presents a very different outlook, I think, a lot. And part of that is because it is, by a woman who has her own ideas and things like that. But it's just an example of like your life will only be richer by finding books or movies or anime or whatever to consume that is by people who are different from you and who have different experiences than you, because you'll get a lot of interesting perspectives. I know My wife, and I've yet to read these, but I definitely need to. She loves this book. I think it's like The Natural History of Dragons or something like that, which is a fantasy book about a woman anthropologist and kind of a, I think it's like Victorian era-esque fantasy, and she studies dragons. And that's super cool, and it's a very different take on it. So like, broadening your media diet can definitely help you think about these things more and also just give you really interesting and neat ideas for stuff that you want to do. Like I hate horror, frankly. That is not my genre. I'm not good at watching it. I also read plot synopsis for horror stuff because it's fascinating what people do with it. And I'll still incorporate that into my design, even though like I'm a complete horror weenie and I could never watch that kind of thing.
Weenie.
I'm serious. Like
It's a great word. I just love the word.
I'm not good with gore to begin with, so horror already tends to lean into that. But like, I don't like creepy things. They make me feel bad and I don't enjoy it. But it still has valuable things to show.
Yeah. On the other side of this, and I wanted to make sure we talked about that. The media, as in the news media that you can consume, is also a very powerful tool. Craig, I'm gonna share a DM that you sent me recently, if you don't mind.
Because
No,
sometimes I send.
you said.
No, I'm mostly, that's usually with my brother Kurt. I send him. We get really rude with each other. But go
You've never been
ahead.
rude to me. You
Okay.
said, making a list of the atrocities being committed by the dark regime in my new sci-fi game. It's almost as if I took headlines from the past several weeks and just changed some names. Weird. That is a great way if you do already have an overtly political game, you have a game with rebels, you have a game there, whether it's a utopian world fighting against the people trying to enter it or a dystopian world trying to make it better in whatever ways you can. Seeing real evil, unfortunately, is constant, and you can take those headlines, put them in your game, and kind of put a spotlight on them. Sometimes I have informed people about what has been happening by running a moonpunk game. Sometimes I have all of my moonpunk stuff comes from a headline or from something that they that is happening or has happened in the world. And sometimes it is a good way to kind of have a little bit of catharsis too, because if there is something bad happening in the world and like really like there's only so much you can do as an individual, it can be cathartic and it can be very healing to fictionally fight it. And I would really recommend doing it. It's fun to do, even like little minor ones. One of the more recent Moonpunk games I ran, I did it based off of when Tim Pool bought a skate park because they wouldn't let him sponsor a skate competition. And I was like, that's a fun Moonpunk story. And that's very minor in the grand scheme of things. Being an 80s movie villain, that's a very minor thing that you could do. But obviously, when we're talking about a dystopian moon, there's a certain person who wants to colonize space, literally, quite literally, be a colonist. He has been very inspiring for moonpunk villains. And it's very, it feels good when you can fight and beat him in a game because he can't really do that. I can't go out and do that.
And the great part about all of this too, from the designer point of view, is that you can be very obvious, and have things like what Jess said, I said, which is true. I did DM that. But you can also, you can layer it in subtext and in symbolism and everything too. Like one of the things that I've got going on in the game is that one of the species who has a fair amount of control for this dark regime is called the Krivid, and they are essentially slug creatures who bond together in like groups, like hot, like in the game they're called colonies, because I'm going to use that word for something completely different than what we're probably talking about here. But it's a group of people, a colony of creatures, right? A colony of animals. And they bond like that for life, and they become this other creature that is the sum of the parts. And the Krivid leadership in this dark regime is making it illegal to break those bonds and bond different ways and do everything. So they are effectively limiting how marriage can function. Because that bonding is the Krivid version of marrying in the, you know, the very, very traditional, like, you know, till death do us part sort of sense. So, you know, if you take one leap of logic, you like, oh, I mean, this is what they're talking about. Like, we, Jess and I love to talk about text and subtext. Like, mm-hmm. I just described mechanically how this is Krivid are made up of the same people, these slug people, and they all stay together forever. But then what am I really saying? And what I'm really saying is these people, there's people in charge who are trying to control how you bond to someone else.
Have you ever, Liana, done a similar thing? Have you ever ripped from the headlines?
Or
done something ridiculously
subtle? Well, here's an interesting thing. I had been, one of my first settings that I was looking to create was actually the concept was a fantasy world that has reached the modern era. So the main country was very much an American allegory. Interestingly, that didn't really take fire. Because people found it exhausting. Mm. And I get it. Honestly, like, I'm not mad about it, because it was very, you know, like, in your face, this is America. And even in 2020, like, the 2016 through 2020, like, people were just tired. So that's kind of why I did make the decision to go with this other setting, which has a lot more fantasy. It's got some differences. It's got some fun things. And I think that's really important too, is like, this is still a game and you do still want to have fun with it. And if you go full ripped from the headlines, that can just get depressing sometimes. But yeah, trial and error for me, and I am creating like commercially oriented products, of course. So like, this could completely not be the case for your personal game. But on one hand, I am of the opinion that subtlety is for cowards. On the other hand, sometimes a layer or two of subtlety does give enough distance that it becomes more palatable. Especially if you are designing for people who have to actually respond to the headlines and have to deal with the fallout for that, giving them a bit of a distance can also be a good thing, because you don't want to have to like re-traumatize people just to play your game. It's kind of rude, honestly. It's not a kind thing to do to someone.
You're absolutely correct. I mean, Moonpunk is very cartoonish and you always get to win, which I think is important. If everyone was getting beaten down by, like, every time we're going to have a corporation, they're going to punch us in the face and spit on us, and then we're just back where we started, that is not fun. Also, Moonpunk is mostly a one-shot kind of thing. It is tiring. And again, like, you got to know your audience and have some safety tools. Some people want to have this. They want to, you know, they want maybe more of a grimdark. I don't really like grimdark, but maybe they want more of a grimdark setting. But like, if I was playing with a group of like, if I was playing with a group of people who are going to be impacted by ice raids in like their family members have the risk of being detained, or they have the risk of being detained, I'm not gonna make them play that. I'm not gonna make them play through their direct trauma. Unless that's something that they're asking to do, because that, like you said, oh gosh, re-traumatizing someone at the table, and that can be a very fine line. It all comes down to your safety tools. It's so important.
As we do say quite often, talk to your players.
Right. I think that's also why, like, yeah, I think that's why a lot of these, like, really overtly political games, like, for example, Eat the Reich, like, it's removed in a couple of ways, even though it's like directly about killing a bunch of Nazis in World War II. It's removed because of the time period, and it's removed because you are vampires. And also, the art is colorful and cartoony. And all of those three things make it a little bit more digestible. No pun intended for Eat the Reich. It makes it a little bit more digestible and kind of easier. And it's kind of like this superpower fantasy. Here you are mowing through town. You really are like, that's the point is for you to win. It's not, the point is not to remind you of your wretched existence. I don't know if I can think of any, I can't think of any games off the top of my head that are just, here's the subject matter, we're gonna do this as it is, straight from, like, with no changes. One game that I did play recently that is directly about a social issue is Women Are Werewolves, which is it's a storytelling game played with cards. And the premise is that you are in a family where the women become werewolves and the men do not. And you are all neither men nor women. You are somewhere on the gender spectrum and you're kind of role playing through that. And at the end of that game, I am tired. You know, you've just gone, like, but the purpose of the game was to kind of like talk about gender and what it means. And it is not meant to be a long campaign. It is meant to be in that time period. We are wanting to explore that. Being with a game designer, making sure that that is well understood by the players who might be picking up your game. Like, this is, if we are going to explore something really deep and troublesome and real to people who are playing at your table, you got to confine it. You got to remove it. You got to do something to it to keep it from hurting people. It's a game. As you said, Leanna, it's a game. It should be fun in one way or another. Yeah. Thinking about the game.
And games can be many things, right? Games can be fun. Games can be thought-provoking. Games can be relaxing. But again, like, I'm trying to sell products, right? Like, I'm trying to make a business. So for me, I want my media to, the games I make, the stories I tell, I want them to have joy and I want them to be fun. Because even, yeah, being able to be happy in the darkest of times is in and of itself an act of resistance. Because you're fighting for a world in which we can dance and we can laugh and we can love, right? So if you refuse to allow yourself that in the present, then you've already ceded that ground to the fascism.
Leanna, that is a great way, I feel like, to wrap this episode up. Thank you for joining us. Do you have any final thoughts on this?
Yeah, absolutely. Everything sucks right now, and I don't think we need to mince that. So in the art that you create, you have the privilege of thinking about it. And in thinking about it and in planning and in designing with intentionality, which I will harp every time I come on here, you can, in your small way, help make this world a bit brighter. And that is important. And keep doing that.
Where can we find you and your games?
So I am Valor Liana on Blue Sky. Technically also on Twitter, but I don't really use that hell site anymore. You can also find us at valorousgames.com or valorousgames on itch.io or DriveThruRPG. And hopefully on Kickstarter within the next month or two.
You can find me on Blue Sky. I'm Jaska. That whatever, it's the regular social thing. I think you can find me. It's just JAWSKA. I'm there. I'm at wannabegames.com or wannabegames on itch and drive through is probably better and more easy to find. Right now, I have one of my games in a bundle of holding called Punch Nazis. So bundle of holding, Punch Nazis. You can get games like Misspent Youth, Eat the Reich, No Gods countries on there. We have a lot of games in this bundle. They're all anti-authoritarian, and part of the proceeds are going to the, let me get the name right, and I'll cut off when I didn't say the name right because I want to make sure. There we go. I was going to say the Constitutional Rights Center. It is the Center for Constitutional Rights. So part of the proceeds are going there. And also, you can bring some of these overtly political games to your table. And I also want to say that we have an administration right now that is actively trying to silence trans voices, and you should make sure that you are supporting trans art and trans writing and trans games. And yeah, I think that's super important.
Thank you for saying that, because it doesn't hit as hard coming from the actual impacted trans person for whatever.
And I'm Craig. You can find everything about me at Nerdburger Craig on various social medias. The website is nerdburgergames.com, and it's possible by the time this comes out that it will be a whole new website, because I'm in the tail end of getting that redesigned. So fingers crossed. And the games are all at drivethroughrpg.com. Thank you so much for diving into this with us, Liana.
Yeah, I'm always happy to
That one's that one sat on
to talk with
that
you
one that
guys.
was an idea that was, we just never got around to it, and we finally got there.
You can always count on me to just go for it.
Yeah,
I don't care. I'll do that.
thank you, Steph Sachs, for our opening and closing theme song, which is Avvel, licensed under Creative Commons. Thank you, Steph Sachs, and thank all of you for listening. And we'll see you back here next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.